Good afternoon. When we visited North Lubeck last summer, we drove up on a hill to have a good look at Quaddy Village. And quite naturally, the conversation turned to the controversial question, when will all this Passamaquoddy tidal power be harnessed to make electricity for our homes, stores, and heavy industries? I was surprised to hear one state of Maine say, it better be pretty soon or there won't be any water power, with all the streams drying up and no rainfall. Well, I knew the farmers all over New England had been hit by the drought, but I didn't realize there was a shortage of water power. We'd always been told Maine's water power is unlimited. So when I found out that it isn't, and that it has to be stored in natural reservoirs against a prolonged drought, I started to ask questions. One of the gentlemen I queried mentioned the Teles Basin up in the Allegash country. And turning to Mr. Myron Avery, he said, why don't you tell Blackie the story of Teles Cut? That would make a corking good Yankee yarn. Now, Myron H. Avery is an attorney in Washington, D.C., but he's a native of Maine, and he's spent many a summer vacation in the Maine woods. In 1937, Mr. Avery prepared a most interesting article on the Teles Cut for Appalachia, the official magazine of the Appalachian Mountain Club. It's in the June issue for 1937, if you want to look it up. Now, before I get into the reasons for digging the Teles Canal, I'd better describe briefly the geographical situation as it existed up there in the Maine woods around 1840. You've all heard how the Rocky Mountains form a continental divide, or watershed, from which the rivers flow east on one side and west on the other. Well, up there in the Maine wilderness, there's a similar situation. A smaller divide, of course, with streams flowing north and south. Flowing north are the St. John, Allegash, and the Fish Rivers, which all come together at Fort Kent and roll merrily along for 400 miles to eventually empty into the Bay of Fundy. This is known as the St. John system and flows north. Flowing south from the divide are the Penobscot and Kennebec, which, as you know, empty into the Atlantic Ocean on the coast of Maine. Now, each of these big river systems has its humble origin in various lakes and ponds in the densely forested Allegash country, but being separated by a very narrow ridge, or height of land as it's called, they flow in opposite directions. In 1840, Maine's wealth was in her great pine forests. Where these were accessible, they'd been heavily cut, and the big lumber interest was sending their scouts, they called them timber cruisers, deeper and deeper into the wilderness to search for new stands of timber. In the unexplored Allegash country, the cruisers found vast stands of virgin pine, some conveniently located on the shores of Eagle, Chamberlain, and Teles Lakes. And when this welcome news reached the mill men, there was a mad scramble to see who could get up there first. Unfortunately for the Maine men, the outlets of these lakes flowed north, which meant that their logs would have to go to St. John in Canada. But a couple of quick-thinking brothers named Strickland and their partner Amos Roberts had a bright idea. Why not cut a canal through that rocky ridge so some of the water from the Chamberlain and Teles Lakes would flow south into the Penobscot? Very much on the QT, they sent a surveyor named Shepherd Booty into the woods to see if this was feasible. Booby reported it was, and the Stricklands petitioned the legislature. What we would like to do, they explained to the lawmakers down in Augusta, is build a dam on Chamberlain and Teles Lakes, then dig a canal from Teles into Webster Pond. By this means, we can float our logs into the east branch of the Penobscot and so on down to Bangor. We'd want to form a corporation and charge a reasonable toll. Well, after due deliberation, the Maine legislature turned them down. And if you think that stumped the Strickland boys, you don't know Maine Yankees. Very quietly, they hustled around to see how much they'd have to pay for this slice of wooded wilderness with its ponds, lakes, and the ridge between, which they wanted to cut a canal in. If you could find any wild land as good as that today, you'd have to shell out $250,000 for 22,000 acres. But the Stricklands found they could buy a whole township for $25,000. But, as so frequently happens in the real estate racket, somebody talked. And overnight, the price was jacked up to $35,000. Anyway, the Stricklands agreed and forked over the money. Now, first, they built a dam on Chamberlain Lake to keep the water from flowing north. Then they put in a dam on Teles Lake and dug the canal. It was 25 feet wide, from 2 to 4 feet deep, and approximately 300 feet long. As soon as Chamberlain Lake filled up and spilled over into Telus, there was plenty of water to carry their logs into Webster Pond and on down into the east branch of the Penobscot. It looked like a good-paying proposition until a spring freshet came along and carried away the Chamberlain Dam. That discouraged the Stricklands, and they sold out to their partner, Mr. Roberts. He rebuilt the dam and put a toll charge of 50 cents per 1,000 board feet for all the logs that went through the Telus Cut. But by the end of 1845, Roberts had taken in only $5,000 in tolls. And with constant troubles from floods and freshets and so forth, he sold out to Rufus Dwinell of Bangor, now remembered as the leading figure in the Telus War. It takes two to make a fight, whether it's nations, companies, or kids on the corner. And in this case, it was Rufus Dwinell versus David Pingree. Mr. Pingree, a wealthy resident of Salem, Massachusetts, had also invested heavily in wild land. Some say he owned as many as 26 townships up there in the Allegash. And, of course, he was as anxious as the next fella to get his logs to market in the quickest possible time and at the lowest cost. And that meant through the Telus Cut. Shortly before Dwinell bought the canal, the Chamberlain Dam went out again. And as he didn't bother to repair it, Pingree did. And he let it be known that after repairing the dam at his own expense, he'd be damned, only that wasn't what he said, if he'd pay any 50-cent toll for using the Telus Canal. Dwinell said, "All right, Mr. Pingree, I'll reduce the toll rate to 33 1/3 cents. But Pingree couldn't see it. He gave orders to his lumber boss to go ahead with a log drive. "If Dwinell don't like it," he said, "he can bring us into court and sue us for trespass. And that'll be lots cheaper than paying toll." Now the Telus War was on. And while it lasted, it was plenty exciting. Pingree's men got their logs into Chamberlain Lake all right, but when they reached Telus, they ran into trouble. Like Clancy in the popular song, Mr. Dwinell had lowered the boom. And to protect it in the Telus Cut and Dam, he hired the toughest gang of rustabouts ever brought into the woods from the Bangor waterfront. Mr. Samuel L. Hunt, who had charge of the drivers, said, "We ran into 100 of those characters the minute we reached Telus. And they carried the biggest butcher knives I ever saw outside of a cookhouse." Beaten, outnumbered, and overawed by the roustabouts, Pingree's drivers had no choice but to give in. Mr. Hunt said afterward, "I'd rather face a bunch of wildcats than them oversized butcher knives. And you know what they made me agree to? Why, I had to go in that office up there and sign an agreement to pay 33 1/3 cents as toll charges, and 1/3 of all the expense for bringing them bums up from Bangor." Well, now, as soon as Mr. Dwinell learned about the agreement and that it had been signed by his agent, the other agent, he lifted his boom and the logs went through. But that didn't end the trouble by a long shot. After the logs had reached the sawmills, Pingree refused to pay, claiming the agreement that Hunt had signed was obtained under duress and by force. The fight was carried to the Maine legislature in the form of a bill that would authorize Pingree to dig his own canal between Telus Lake and Webster Pond, thus doing away with the toll charge. The matter was referred to the Committee on Inland Waters, and many and hot were the hearings. Finally, the committee decided that inasmuch as Dwinell had purchased the original canal, he was entitled to operate it, but he would have to form a corporation, and he had to reduce his toll charge to 24 cents per 1,000 board feet of lumber. And furthermore, if these terms were not acceptable to Mr. Dwinell, Pingree could go ahead and dig a ditch of his own. Naturally, Dwinell accepted. And in 1846, he was granted a charter. And the Telus Cut is still operating under that charter today. Only now it belongs to the Bangor Hydroelectric and the Great Northern Paper Company. In his story of Telus Cut, published by Appalachia, Mr. Avery says, "After the war was over, between Dwinell and Pingree, another controversy came up. This time it was the Canadian lumbermen who protested, bitterly resenting what they considered a diversion of the St. John waters, and their resentment led to action. One night there was a big bang up there, and the dam below the outlet of Chamberlain Lake went sky high. Seems some Canadian lumberjacks had been rather callous with a few sticks of dynamite. And as a result of that prank, The river at Grand Falls, 165 miles away, rose 3 feet in a half an hour. And there are plenty of other such stories told about Teela's troubles by the old woodsman. One such yarn has to do with the time an armed guard was placed on the dam to patrol night and day. A friendly-looking stranger came up one afternoon and said, Hi there, bub. What's the make of that good-looking gun you're toting? The guard handed it over, only to find the muzzle aimed at his hot, red face. He was told to get and be quick about it. And that night, more dynamite was set off. But luckily, only the apron was damaged. And with their explosives all used up, the troublemakers departed. There were other attempts to disrupt Teela's and Chamberlain Dams, but they all failed. The feuding and fighting finally died down, and with the passing of the picturesque log drives, the Teela's Cut is all but forgotten. I wouldn't be surprised, however, to hear that a few of you folks have been through Teela's in a canoe. I don't recommend it unless you have an experienced guide, and you'll need one to make that thrilling East Branch canoe trip. It takes about 2 weeks, I'm told, and covers 120 miles of Maine's most spectacular wilderness. There are two ways to start for Teela's. One from Chicansook Dam and one from Northeast Carry at Moosehead. After paddling 18 miles, you come to Mud Pond, and after wading or poling down Mud Pond Brook, you enter the 3-mile thoroughfare which connects Chamberlain Lake and Teela's. Most sportsmen prefer to carry around Teela's Dam and the Cut. But if conditions are right, you can shoot the Teela's rabbits. 3/4 of a mile of white water in less than 2 minutes. That's 3/4 of a mile of water, all rapids, in less than 2 minutes. After crossing Webster Pond, you'll have 8 more miles of quick water to Indian Carry. Beyond is Grand Pitch, Little East Branch, Metagammon Lake, and Stair Falls. This entire run is rough enough to test the mettle of the most experienced canoeist, and no amateur should ever attempt it. I might add that Teela's Cut is about 20 miles north from Mount Katahdin. The only road that runs anywhere near it is the Tote Road, built years ago by the CCC boys. And that ends in the woods 12 miles below. It's wild country up there, but boy, what fishing. Full information on this country and the canoe trips can be obtained by writing the Maine Development Commission at Augusta. And if you'd like Mr. Avery's story of the Teela's Cut, complete with maps and photographs and history, copies are for sale at the headquarters of the Appalachian Mountain Club, 5 Joy Street, Boston. As I said, today, Teela's Cut is jointly owned by the Bangor Hydroelectric and the Great Northern Paper Companies. The Great Northern looks after the logs and collects the tolls, and the Bangor Hydroelectric supervises the water storage. They tell me that one filling of the Teela's Chamberlain Basin amounts to 4.5 billion cubic feet of water. And that's enough to light up 6,000 homes for a period of 4 months. So you see, the little 24-foot ditch dug by pioneer lumbermen over 100 years ago up in the Allagash Wilderness is now playing an important role in the conservation of water power.